This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Protests erupting in the capital of the nation of Georgia as demonstrators clash with police for a second night, opposing the government's suspension of EU membership talks. The unrest following accusations of election rigging and EU condemnation of Georgia's democratic backsliding. President Vladimir Zelensky telling Sky News through a translator that NATO membership must be extended to Ukraine.
The invitation must be given to Ukraine within its internationally recognized border. You can't give invitation to just one part of a country.
Here at home, from Michigan to upstate New York, millions on alert for lake effect snow. New York's Watertown could see up to 5 feet of snow, with travel and power disruptions expected. Black Friday shoppers spending a record $10.8 billion online yesterday. That's up more than 10% from last year. And Cyber Monday expected to push those online shopping numbers even higher. This is ABC News. When President-elect Donald Trump takes office in January, he'll have a Republican majority in both the House and Senate. But both are small majorities. The House has two races still not called, and some House members will be vacating their seats for positions in the Trump administration. ABC Washington correspondent Jay O'Brien explains what that means for the House Speaker.
It means that Mike Johnson can't really lose anyone on any kind of high-stake vote. It also means that people can't be sick. There are members who can't miss their planes. There can't be travel issues. And that's going to be a very serious point of conflict, potentially, between Mike Johnson and some of the hardliners in his party.
New York State Senator James Scofus announcing his bid for Democratic National Committee chair, vowing to bring fresh ideas and ditch the, quote, stale Beltway-centered playbook. The underdog candidate saying Democrats must listen to voters and fight harder to win nationwide, joining Martin O'Malley and Ken Martin in the race to replace outgoing chair Jamie Harrison. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going
yes.
to get yes. them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Groups fighting to improve access to health care are asking the U.S. Senate to reject Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s nomination for Secretary of Health and Human Services. Suzanne Potter reports.
RFK Jr. is an environmental lawyer who ran for president and then threw his support to Donald Trump in August. Matthew Herdman, California state director with the nonprofit Protect Our Care, says RFK Jr. has falsely linked vaccines to autism.
When he went to American Samoa to talk about vaccine safety there, almost immediately afterwards, there was a large measles outbreak that led to 83 Americans losing their lives. I would be terrified to see that happen, spread nationwide across our country.
RFK Jr. has said one of his priorities would be to re-examine pesticides that are legal in the U.S. but are banned or being phased out in Europe. He has also promoted raw milk, despite warnings from the FDA and CDC that unpasteurized milk can carry salmonella, E. coli, listeria, and the virus that causes bird flu. Dr. Diana Dayal is an emergency room resident physician at UCLA and a union representative who says she's troubled by RFK Jr.'s beliefs.
He has touted countless baseless claims time and time again that have later been contradicted by expert review. From his takes on vaccine development to fluoride safety, he misrepresents isolated data as conclusive and then interprets other studies incorrectly. Conveniently, he then ignores vast scientific evidence and peer review that runs counter to his beliefs.
Chris Noble with Health Access California notes that RFK Jr. once called the COVID-19 vaccine the deadliest vaccine ever made.
RFK Jr. will continue to propagate medical conspiracies that further erode trust in evidence-based medicine that will result in preventable death and grave threats to public health if given a seat of power.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine and highs in the low 20s, wind chills around zero. For tonight, mostly clear with a low of 9. Sunshine, 25 for Sunday, mostly sunny Monday with a high near 29. 29 and partly sunny on Tuesday, 37 Wednesday. Currently, 23 degrees.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time, an all-new live show back in the studio. Join us for a look back at the holiday weekend and prepare you for the week ahead.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
First up in the spotlight this week is the Dom Salvia Show. Maggie Dawn stuck around after her 2 to 4 p.m. show to do some overtime radioing with Dom, as she does every Tuesday. On this week's Overtime with Maggie Dawn, former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman faces a serious disciplinary filing from our state's Office of Lawyer Regulations for, well, violating just about every attorney ethics standard there is.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening. You can be a part of this fine production, 855-752-4842. Jess P.S. on the board, on the horn. And we got Maggie Dawn because it is Tuesday. It is Overtime with Maggie Dawn. You can check her out 2 to 4 p.m. here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Maggie, thanks for sticking around. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, Dom. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. You had a great interview today. And if you missed it, go check out the podcast, civicmedia.us. Jeff Mandel from Law Forward. And the topic of that conversation, I want to briefly touch on with you, Maggie. Former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman facing disciplinary complaint tied to the 2020 election probe. Now, this is the guy that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss apparently
handpicked,
and then later was really felt bad about that because he's not a great guy. Felt bad about that pick, apparently. But there were repercussions from this guy, not only spending millions of dollars, but also violating pretty much every ethics code a judge may have. A little bit from the reporting here, the complaint alleges Gableman made public accusations of improper, possibly unlawful activity by the Madison mayor and the Green Bay mayor. And the complaint says, quote, Gableman had no tangible, verifiable, objective, persuasive evidence to support his assertions. Gableman's accusations caused serious reputational damage to the public officials involved. Maggie, I know Jeff Mandel had some thoughts on this, and I'm glad that this is finally coming to fruition. It's been some time since Law Forward filed their complaint, but now it looks like this is something's happening here, Maggie. So what's your take?
Jeff, I think, put it best, and I completely agreed with his bottom line assessment. First, Jeff pointed out that the attorney code of ethics that attorneys must agree to abide by in the state of Wisconsin is extremely long and detailed. And by Jeff's summary, he said that Michael Gableman basically violated every single sentence
Come on.
Of the attorney's ethical oath. This does not, I mean, the fact that his violations are that numerous and extensive, given all of the public reporting, and I'm sure there are some things that the OLR uncovered in its own investigation, surprises me not one whit.
So what's the best case scenario here? I mean, of the things that I've heard, I have no doubt that he violated those ethical standards. I mean, the guy wanted to, you know, bring people in, confiscate their property and, you know, interview them behind closed doors at the strip mall that he was at in order to, you know, push this BS theory. And that's the underlying thing that bothers me the most. This was all an effort, a false effort to cast shade on our election process. Maggie, what would you like to see happen in this case?
I'd like Michael Gableman to be disbarred. There's no question that the man should be disbarred. If this was any other attorney and it was about any other set of issues or conduct, there's no question the lawyer would have been disbarred and that the OLR probably would have initiated an investigation on its own without a catalyzing complaint, which is what Jeff Mendel and Law Forward did. They filed that, back in March of 2023. Any other lawyer in any other circumstance with this litany of violations would without a doubt be disbarred. You cannot lie to courts repeatedly. You cannot withhold evidence. You cannot intimidate people. You cannot threaten it was basically sort of, he didn't specify like a particular threat, but overall demeanor. He said some really disparaging things about women on a hot mic in a court hearing. Absolutely abhorrent behavior. He had conflicts of interest he didn't disclose. He submitted false affidavits.
You're an attorney.
Which kind of lie? And like, right. Yep, he did it in an affidavit and testimony, behaved like a horse's patoot in hearings. He was disruptive. Again, false statements, sworn statements to the assembly itself. Oh, seizing property from the mayors of Green Bay and Madison, which is sort of,
how authoritarian, man. This is like a little Trumpster, got a little fiefdom going on down here. According to the OLR complaint, Gableman filed petitions containing false statements when he attempted to seize property, as you mentioned, Maggie, from the mayors of Green Bay and Madison. I mean, right off the bat, under what authority do you have Mr. Gableman grab anybody's property ever? Made false statements to and withheld information from a state assembly committee regarding the responses from Green Bay and Madison mayors to subpoenas issued to them, engaged in the disruptive behavior at a June 2021 court hearing, as you mentioned, false statements about the integrity of a judge, false derogatory and demeaning public statements about opposing counsel, violated the state's open records law, accepted his role in the probe without disclosing conflicts of interest, abandoned his duty to former clients by publicly promoting efforts to recall Voss, and submitted a false affidavit to the OLR, who is making the complaint. I mean, when you're like lying to the watchdog about the lies that you did over the years, I think you're in pretty deep guano there. So the worst case, or best case for us, worst case for Gableman, Maggie, is he can get disbarred. Any fines, any criminal activity associated with this?
This is not criminal. This is a purely civil matter that's only and exclusively about attorney licensure. There could potentially be a monetary penalty. He destroyed records. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And let me just say this. Full disclosure, I have, I think, had 3 or 4 complaints filed against me over the course of my 21-year career as a lawyer in the state of Wisconsin. 3 of them were ticked off opposing counsel in my capacity as Milwaukee County's chief legal officer, which were just, and frankly, 2 of the lawyers that filed those weren't really fully... I won't even go there. There were issues yeah. with the quality of the lawyering from the other side. Sure. I am the head of the office, so they filed a complaint. 2, I didn't even have to respond to. 1, I did. And these things sometimes happen, okay?
Yeah, sure.
But even when I knew the complaints were utterly unmeritorious. Oh, and the 4th one I had was I helped a friend get a temporary restraining order against her abusive husband. He happened to be a sheriff's deputy, and so he yielded a weapon. And as in the course of the TRO, he has to give up the gun. And he was very angry about that because it got him fired. And anyways, he came after me in the OLR. But even in these cases where my disciplinary complaints were utterly meritless, I took them seriously. I responded candidly. I provided all of the information and then some that was requested. I didn't exaggerate. I didn't dare mislead the OLR. This is serious stuff. And also in full candor, if anybody Googles me, I once got suspended. My license was suspended in the state of Wisconsin because I failed to file during COVID the required paperwork to demonstrate my compliance with the continuing legal educational requirements.
Maggie, paperwork crimes.
And they ripped, yeah, my license was suspended. It's like an administrative suspension. Okay, did we get your paperwork? Okay, now it's, but like that tells you this stuff matters.
Right.
And even then, I took that really seriously. I hired a lawyer that does all like ethics compliance to, because I care about this. I didn't go willy-nilly. I share all of that, one, in the interest of full disclosure, so nobody can call me a hypocrite, but two, to share with all of you out there and you, Dom, like, this stuff matters. It's serious. And the impunity with which Michael Gableman has conducted himself at all points in time in his run to be a Supreme Court justice, which led to his first disciplinary investigation, right?
Mm-hmm.
His conduct of the investigation itself, his conduct in court, his conduct before the legislature, and apparently his very responses to the OLR investigation indicates a guy that thinks that he can do whatever the hell he wants. And I don't care what side of the bread your political bread is buttered on, that kind of behavior is bad for democracy, and it is bad for each and every one of you.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That is the award-winning host, Maggie Dawn, from the Maggie Dawn Show, 2 to 4 p.m. right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Apparently, according to, I think it was Jesse Point at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Voss could not be reached for comment. But earlier this year, he told WISN-TV's Upfront that he hoped Gableman would be disbarred. Now, this is Robin Voss, the Republican who hired him after jumping on a plane with Trump to put him in charge and gave him basically an open checkbook, millions of dollars spent. My understanding, Gableman spent the first few months in the library because he didn't know what was going on while he's cashing the checks as the supposed expert. How much responsibility does Robin Voss and the Republicans and ultimately MAGAs and Trump, do you think, bear in this issue?
From a moral perspective, their responsibility is equal to, if not greater than, Mr. Gableman's. Mr. Gableman was facially completely unqualified to conduct this investigation. Selection of Mr. Gableman was not based on his qualifications. His selection by Assembly Speaker Voss was because the guy was unhinged, out of control, intimidating. By the way, his first ethics complaint dealt with what I'm going to call like really abhorrent behavior and judgment. Yeah, that's why they picked him, because the guy will do and say anything. It was to find someone who doesn't care what the rules are to engage in a partisan big lie about the election. All Robin Voss needed to do was do what he knew to be true on the facts and tell people the election was fair and transparent and nothing was wrong. Instead, he decided to light a million plus taxpayer dollars, your dollars, on fire to have a loose cannon with no business in an investigation let loose on our election processes and let loose against our neighbors and friends that staff our election systems across the state. Shame.
Or as perhaps Mega would say, if Matt Gaetz doesn't work out, the next Attorney General of the United States, Michael Gableman. Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Maggie Dawn. We got Just PS on the board coming back with more. Yes, we have what? Mace. A congresswoman, Nancy Mace from South Carolina. Well, she's got lots of big plans at the Capitol. Stick around.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. News from the center, WRCE.
When severe weather hits and the power goes out, do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane-powered generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
As a network, we're called Civic Media because a big part of it is we want to start modeling how civic discourse really should happen and being respectful of each other's opinions, even if you disagree, you know, like they should be given a platform.
If Rocker and I can get along, right. We can all get along.
I know, exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Rocker?
Yeah, that's right, Jimmy.
Well, you do have a wall in between the two of you, so
glass.
It's like...
It's only glass. Tear down the walls. Listen to Max Inc. Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear from the Todd Alba Show. In Mauston, a series of failed referendums to fund their public schools have left the district in dire straits, to the point where they may need to dissolve completely. With the help of a caller who used to teach in Milwaukee, Todd Alba explains how we got to this point, as well as the ways the GOP-led state legislature continues to divert money from our public schools.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 21 past the hour of 1 o'clock on Thursday, November 21st, 2024. If you are listening to us, listening on WAUK in Milwaukee area, down that part of the state, drive carefully. Most of the accumulating snow is over, although there might be a few flurries, a little bit of light rain. Temperatures on the rise, but still multiple traffic accidents, road closures around the greater Milwaukee area, south to the Illinois border. Be cognizant of that if you're on the road. Taking the call there, right before the break, caller had a great point. I think she was fair in saying that she sees these big athletic complexes that some districts are passing and disagrees with that. I would say, number one, look, those go on the ballot on the referendum, and local voters could decide whether that's something that's important to them or not. I'm not necessarily opposed to nice athletic fields because, again, I think it's a community gathering point. It's important for that community. And if it's not, they're not going to pass that. But many of these referendums that are up in public schools are for operational things. Keeping the lights on, fixing roofs, HVAC equipment, that sort of thing. And also, I've told this story before. I'll tell the quick version because we have people on the line. My dad coached wrestling and cross country for a number of years up in Shawnee, Wisconsin, about 30 miles west of Green Bay. And I can remember when former Republican Assembly Speaker John Gard, after he left the legislature, he and his wife, Kate Zeisky, were living in the greater Green Bay area, and John Gard was coaching the Notre Dame high school cross-country team in Green Bay. Private school. I'm sure it's a fine school. Nothing wrong with that. But Dad used to tell his cross-country team of his girls and gals would show up in a yellow school bus, and they'd get out and, you know, start stretching, good weather, bad weather. And here'd come Notre Dame Academy High School from Green Bay on a coach bus. And they bring out a couple of great big fancy tents like you see like at college athletes. And they'd have a training table with a trainer. And they'd have a buffet set up for these kids. It was better than some, you know, D3 schools. Because they're a private school. Their benefactors don't have to worry about taking kids with special needs. They put it into high-end things like their and that's the cross-country team. Can you imagine how they treat their football and basketball teams? There's a big difference between public and private education, the priorities, and the rules that apply to each one. And again, we have over $4.5 billion of our tax money sitting in Madison. And Republicans like Tony Kurtz and Howard Markline want to give you $100 check to buy your next vote. 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Charles, thanks for your patience down there in beautiful Milwaukee. First of all, Charles, how are the roads? Are you staying inside today? How are things down in your part of Milwaukee?
I am actually in Vegas right now, Todd.
So fantastic.
My wife and I missed all of that.
Well, I hope you're lucky at the tables.
We had a little snow in Minneapolis. We had a fly from Mitchell to Minneapolis to de-ice the plane. But outside that, though, no, we're
all
in
right.
Vegas.
Well, I'm glad you listened to us on the app, I assume. Thanks for taking the app out to Vegas. What did you want to say on school funding?
Yes. So I spent 18 years of my life in MPS. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that people
Milwaukee public schools, just to clarify. Go ahead.
Yes. So let's say there was a Mike in fourth grade class at a school, and Mike was a behavior child. Mm-hmm. That following school year, Mike's parents decide, well, let's take Mike and put him in a voucher school. Well, Mike goes to the voucher school, is having issues, but they keep him there until third Friday count. Third Friday count is when they count all of the kids in the school, and that's when the state divvies out its funds at how much money each school will get. Well, a week after third Friday count, let's say Mike comes in and looks at the teacher the wrong way. Well, the teacher says, I'm scared of Mike. Well, they kick Mike out. Mike has to go back to MPS. Now, the funds that came with Mike to the voucher school stays at the voucher school. Mm-hmm. Mike comes back to Milwaukee Public Schools without the funding that was given to Mike for the school year.
Yep.
It happens a lot. I saw it a lot where kids would go to these schools and they come back. The whole family would come back after third Friday count because one of the kids got in trouble and they sent them back to MPS. And in public schools have to take the kids back.
I cannot thank you. I cannot thank you, Charles, enough for this call. You nailed it there. And to have a first-person experience like this, that puts it down there where the chickens can get at it, so to speak, and really lets people understand this problem. That you as public educators, you know, you get literally cheated out of taxpayer money. But yet you have to fund the kid who's having the special needs. It's remarkable.
Yes.
And thank you for all your service in public education, Charles. Really appreciate you. And
one more quick question, Ty, if I could.
Yeah.
And you're talking about schools, also the funding. If you're not a homeowner, then you have no money going to the school. So when my daughter played high school basketball, she had a playoff game at University School in River Hills. And I thought we were on a college campus.
Right.
I mean, they had their own field house.
Right.
I mean, hockey. I mean, so, if you don't have homeowners in the community, then that also limits the amount of money that goes toward the school and the upkeep of the school.
Great point, Charles. Thank you so much for this call. Really, really appreciate it. And safe travels as well. Lots of people on the phone lines. Chico, Ted, Peter, don't go anywhere. Want to get to your phone calls as well. Just coming up against the clock here. So don't want to cut anybody off here. But see, now we're getting somewhere, as they say. These are actual, and not to say that other issues aren't important. We're going to continue to talk about national issues as well. They are important. But as we approach 2025, it's good to be vigilant about what's actually happening in our own neighborhoods. Elections have consequences. Republicans have maintained control of the legislature. They are sitting on $4.5 billion plus of your tax money, our tax money. We're going to discuss it more. How should it be used? Your phone calls next. Don't go anywhere. It's the All Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Protests erupting in the capital of the nation of Georgia as demonstrators clash with police for a second night, opposing the government's suspension of EU membership talks. The unrest following accusations of election rigging and EU condemnation of Georgia's democratic backsliding. President Vladimir Zelensky telling Sky News through a translator that NATO membership must be extended to Ukraine.
The invitation must be given to Ukraine within its internationally recognized border. You can't give invitation to just one part of a country.
Here at home, from Michigan to upstate New York, millions on alert for lake effect snow. New York's Watertown could see up to 5 feet of snow, with travel and power disruptions expected. Black Friday shoppers spending a record $10.8 billion online yesterday. That's up more than 10% from last year. And Cyber Monday expected to push those online shopping numbers even higher. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Bucks basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks host the Washington Wizards at Fiserv Forum. Head coach Doc Rivers asked how Chris Middleton is doing after surgery on both ankles this summer.
It went great. Yeah, he's progressing. I keep saying it, but you can ask as many questions you want. It's not going to make him come back faster.
NFL, the Packers start practice tomorrow preparing for Thursday night's game in Detroit against the Lions. College football, the Badgers losing at home to Minnesota 24-7. Head coach Luke Fickell on finishing the season with a losing record of 5-7.
We got a lot of work to do, and there's only one way. Understand this. Everybody can say recruiting. Everybody can say go transfer portal. All those things that we'll do, but there's one way to get better at this freaking game, and it's to freaking work at it, and it's to play it, and it's to go out there and perform. You don't just get better practice. You don't just get better watching film. And if we don't go out and perform and play, then our ass ain't going to get any better.
That's Wisconsin's head football coach, Luke Fickell, with Sports on Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy and a low near 10 tonight. Sunday, a mix of sun and clouds, not as cold, a high in the mid-20s. Temps warm a little further through the 20s as we look into early next week. Some chances for a brief flurry or snow shower later Tuesday into Wednesday. Right now, it's 22.
Harbor Freight knows tool people like to keep busy. But with our Black Friday sale now through Monday, you'll want to free up some time. We're talking deals like our 5,000-watt generators under $800, 17-foot ladders for $99.99, and 40% off Icon Pro socket sets. Whatever you do, do it for less at Harbor Freight. Valid until 12/2/24. While supplies last, limitations apply.
It's the sound of a soda, considered one of the coolest things made in Wisconsin. Jolly Good has been around since the 1960s. Cryer Foods makes it in Random Lake, which is in Sheboygan County. But Cryer started as a canning company in 1913. What was being canned there? Sauerkraut? Peas? Beets? The answer coming up.
At Jolly Good, we believe in quality.
Soda turned into an important revenue stream when production at the canning company slowed in the colder months. So what was being canned there? Sauerkraut? Peas? Beets? All three, plus juice, soups, and more. By the 1960s, Cryer quit canning and went all in on Jolly Good soda.
For flavor and value, Jolly Good's got it.
The latest resurgence of Jolly Good makes it a slice of Wisconsin for yesterday and today. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it. All right.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Dom Salvia.
Just PS, Dom's producer here. Next time, Dom will be back live for all the political talk you missed. No more looking at how the sausage gets made, except for the government. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we'll hear a segment from Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Pat spoke with Hans Breitenmoser, a dairy farmer, about how the election of Donald Trump and his promise of mass deportations would cripple every part of America's food supply chain.
Welcome back. It's 7:34 on this Tuesday morning, November 19th. This is Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, we spent a big chunk of the last hour talking about President-elect Trump nominating Sean Duffy, the former congressman for Northern Wisconsin, to be the next transportation secretary. There's been a lot of chatter about all these various cabinet picks, their qualifications, their potential criminal entanglements. You know, you've got your Matt Gaetz, your Pete Hegseth, Robert Kennedy Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, Kristi Noem, Marco Rubio, now Sean Duffy. Here's one thing that hasn't been talked about a lot. Who's going to be the next Secretary of Agriculture? It's not an unimportant role. In fact, just yesterday from Governor Tony Evers' office came the latest measurement of the impact of the of farming on the Wisconsin economy. Governor Evers and the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection announced that based on a study by the UW Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics, the Wisconsin agricultural production and food processing sectors have increased 11%, and they combine to have a $116 billion impact on the economy. That is 14% of the state's total economic output is related to agriculture and food processing. And so if you're going to do right by Wisconsin agriculture and food processing and jobs and the economy, you'd better have a good ag secretary, and you'd better have some good members of Congress who maybe serve on the ag committee. At this point, Wisconsin has neither of those things, but Hans Breitenmoser is going to tell Donald Trump how to fix it all. And he joins us right now from his dairy farm near Merrill. Hans, how you doing?
I'm fine, Pat. Sorry for the delay here. Between my computer and my phone, I'm going to start a conspiracy theory about Elon Musk taking over all of our tech and screwing us over here.
I think you might have been right the first time when you mistakenly said Elon Trump. I think he might change his name.
Yeah, I know. I'll talk about Freudian slip. Holy smoke.
I mean, whatever it takes to be essentially his shadow vice president. But be that as it may. So I wanted to talk more about the importance of an ag secretary and what we should look for in that person. And then I saw the other day that you were featured in a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article about Trump's plans for mass deportation. Now, we have talked about these two main pillars of Trump when it comes to the rural economy: mass deportations and trade wars through high tariffs. So we'll set aside the tariffs because I think we've spoken about that much more frequently. But the mass deportations, you did not hold back on what that would look like for, again, a sector that we've now determined is 14% of the total economy for the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, and I haven't read the article yet.
You look good. You came off all right. You know.
All right, good. Do I look tall and thin? Because that was my one request of the photo.
Oh, sorry, that doesn't work for any of us. No. But the words that you said were spot on as far as what mass deportations, or even just the threat of mass deportations, would do, starting with Wisconsin dairy farms.
Yeah, well, and so, I mean, the gist of that article and the gist of what I've been saying for several years is that agriculture stops working without immigrant labor. That's a fact, that it just stops. So the concern, of course, or the manufactured outrage, of course, is against all these illegal immigrants, all the illegals. And what I'd like to take a minute to talk about is what you were talking about earlier, which is to say the message, right? When you take an issue and you make an issue that didn't exist previously and demonize a certain group of people, you're going to get people out to the polls on things that aren't even, you know, reality. And I had an interesting conversation the other day, if I may. A fellow that comes to our farm and does a service for us once a month I was talking to him about the election, and of course he's a Trump voter, and I said something. I made some comment about, well, you know, it won't be long now, and nobody in the dairy industry will have a job anymore because everybody's going to get kicked out of the country. And for those of us, you know, who have white skin, we'll be able to stay here, but we won't have any work. And he said, well, I wouldn't worry about that. They're only gonna kick out, you know, the illegals. And I said, you understand that the lion's share of the farms that you go to, all the people that help you do your work are undocumented people. You get that, right? And he, honest to God, he didn't get it. He didn't understand that. And suddenly I had an epiphany myself, because the people in rural America aren't all nasty bigots, but they've been told this lie that illegal immigrants are the ones that are coming across stealing and raping. The ones that you know must be here legally, right?
Right.
That's the disconnect.
I have said many times and will say again that as somebody who has always understood the value of immigration reform and how badly we need immigration reform, we need more immigrants in this country. Even though I've been that person for all these years, I do not have any shame in admitting how gobsmacked I was when Ruth Conniff came out with her book. The title of it is Milked. I recommend it to everybody. And when she said that it was something like 80% of immigrant labor or labor on dairy farms is from undocumented immigrants. And in the Journal Sentinel article, it quotes the National Milk Producers Federation as saying dairies that employ immigrants are responsible for 79% of the entire U.S. milk supply. And by the way, and this is where I like you to point out the distinction here, as Ruth did to me, it's that people would say, well, why don't they just get visas? Well, there are agricultural visas, but not the kind that would work for dairy.
Yeah, I mean, but it speaks to your earlier point about immigration reform. You know, everybody seems to agree there has to be some sort of reform, but nobody really understands how the system currently works and so forth and so on. And then it's become this political football, right? So that when we had a chance at some decent reform to move the needle in the right direction, who killed it? Donald Trump. To make a political issue out of it. So we could have been well on our way in the direction that says, you know, realizes that, hey, we need X number of people in this country to do X amount of work. I mean, think about it, Pat. You're talking, everybody spouts these numbers out, 11 million undocumented people. All right, well, let's take half of them or so. Let's just take 4, 5, 6 million people out of the economy right now, an economy that doesn't have enough people already. And now we're going to take millions of people out of the economy. I mean, I don't have a PhD in economics, but jeepers cripes, I think even I can figure out that that's going to leave quite a hole.
Yes, it is. And for reasons that include the fact that agricultural visas are seasonal. They're designed for allowing migrants to come in and harvest crops. And exactly. then they're supposed to go home after that.
That's right.
That ain't how cows work.
No,
it's a year-round thing, and there's no year-round visa. And despite multiple efforts to try to get year-round ag visas as just a first step in agriculture reform, in immigration reform, Republicans keep killing it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And they keep coming up with these ridiculous things. But they need that boogeyman, you see, because it gets them votes. When Tom Tiffany can have advertisements to say, oh, well, look at this brown guy. He raped a girl and so forth and so on. Neglecting to mention, of course, that the crime rate amongst these folks is way lower than the average crime rate in the United States.
Correct.
So you demonize these people. You make them the boogeyman, and that gets you elected next time. It's cynical and it's disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, I recall that Tiffany put up a post last week at some point where, again, it was all about, removing migrants. He couldn't wait for mass deportation. And the post that I put up was something along the lines of, hey, congratulations, everybody. Tom Tiffany is volunteering to milk your cows for you. Because, I mean, he knows what the situation is, and yet he continues to spout off about, you know, the need for mass deportation. Well, unless Tom Tiffany is going to show up at a whole bunch of barns, you know, with his boots, I can't use the other term for that, you know, then he is truly talking out both sides of his mouth.
Yeah. It's so frustrating because, you know, those of us who are in the industry see people born outside this country, working hard every day, doing all sorts of work. getting the job done as immigrants do and have done for all the years in our nation's history. And to have them othered the way they've been and demonized the way they've been. But again, I think it's per my earlier comments, we have this disconnect in the reality and the messaging, and somehow we need to get over that hump. And I'm not sure how to do that other than what you were talking about earlier is keep this media operation going and make sure that reality is being presented as an option as well.
That's the other thing we've got to do is we've got to make reality a reality. Because mm-hmm. right now people think that reality TV is reality when there's nothing in the real world, pun intended, you know, that has any bearing to what people are seeing on their TV. But if you hear those messages, if you see enough of those political ads, again, you think that there's a problem here that, well, again, there is a problem, but the way to address it is to actually try to solve the problem and not just, you know, demonize those who are trying to, you know, make a buck, who are trying to provide for their family and who are, in your case, hiring people because otherwise your farm's got to shut down.
Absolutely. And that is my reality right now. And trying to, you know, understand how my industry continues and how my farm continues without the presence of immigrants. Somehow or another, we need to again, move that needle on getting business interests to have the ear of the government, which historically hasn't been hard. And I feel like that's one thing that gives me a little bit of hope. Ironically enough, is that, you know, since the only thing that government tends to listen to is people with deep pockets, then perhaps there's enough, wisdom in the industries that rely on immigrant labor to tap the brakes on this deportation nonsense and finally come up with some immigration reform. And I don't care who gets credit for it. I really right. don't. It's a matter of getting things done and getting and doing the right thing. And if the Republicans get that done during their administration, I couldn't care less, but let's just make it happen.
Yeah.
People's lives are impacted in the meantime. That's what people have to understand. Real people are being impacted in a big way in the meantime.
So let's get to the other topic very quickly, and that who might be agriculture secretary. And the fact of the matter is there's a couple of names being bandied about. Sarah Frey, the founder of Frey Farms, and a longtime Trump donor, Charles Herbster. Frey has participated in lobbyist events throughout D.C. Herbster has a major beef operation. But a lot of the reports say, does it really matter who is the ag secretary? Will Robert Kennedy Jr. basically have all the influence about agribusiness and about farming practices and about food? And I don't think that's going to inspire a lot of confidence in farmers or food producers if they can't tell who's really in charge.
Well, again, it's just this chaos in a cluster, right? Because what we can pretty much guarantee is that Trump is going to surround himself more this time around than last time with people who will do what he wants them to do. It's all about loyalty, and it has zero to do with experience. That's what should concern everybody. And the process is the other big concern. If we're going to get rid of FBI investigations into the, you know, or background checks, if we're going to get rid of Senate confirmation hearings, and the Republicans in Congress go along with that because, oh, don't worry, he'll pick a good person for the job, then it's going to go south real fast. So whether that's in ag or at the EPA or at education or pick your discipline, it's going to have a negative impact on how things function.
And I'll be curious to see as well is whether Derek Van Orden holds on to his seat on the House Agriculture Committee or if Republicans use it as more of a political tool to say, OK, we needed to get you over the hump. We needed to give you something to burnish your credentials. Now that you've been reelected, we're going to put somebody else in there. But again, that's a discussion for another time. A lot to watch throughout the transition. Hans Breitenmoser, thank you as always. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Well, thanks a lot, Pat. Take care.
You bet. Have a great day. When we come back, Chad Holmes tells us more from 98.9 WXCO about what's coming up on his program next on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Sawyer.
And I'm Shannon.
Together, we're Twin Stunts, the only twin motorcycle freestyle show in the world.
We are born and raised in Wisconsin, so we want all our fellow cheeseheads to know that even though we clutch it up, hit 12, and drift in our show, we would never do it on the open road. And there's another thing we would never do on the road. Drive drunk. Drive sober, or get pulled over. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at ZeroInWisconsin.gov. Wisconsin DOT.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, a professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life.
Sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear a segment from the menagerie that is the John and Gordy Show. John and Gordy were joined by Dr. Tim Slecker of Busted Pencils, another show on the Civic Media Radio Network, to talk about former professional wrestling executive Linda McMahon and her nomination for Secretary of Education by Donald Trump. To hear more of the shows featured on the Civic Media Spotlight, download the Civic Media app available on the Google Play and Apple App Store, or check them out after the fact as a podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or at civicmedia.us.
WMDX, John and Gordy in the morning, and we're talking to Tim Slecker from Busted Pencils, and we're talking about education. I love the way you guys talking about education.
Education,
yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things are going on with religion in schools. We were talking about how that's not going to happen. Ryan Walters is not going to be the head of the department now. Not going to be able to, you know, put some kind of national Christianity in our school systems.
Right.
But Texas is trying to do that.
Sure.
Let's listen to a little cut here about what's happening in Texas. 131.
Okay. Right,
let's play that.
The new curriculum being considered by the state school board is written for elementary classes.
I just think that if we try to let too much be taken over by any one religion, we risk damaging the experience of children who have differing beliefs.
The Bluebonnet curriculum covers kindergarten through fifth grade. Several lessons incorporate well-known Bible stories. One, on the Golden Rule, mentions the Sermon on the Mount, along with how other religions have variations of it. The story of the prodigal son and the Good Samaritan. Some lessons on classical art note how stories from Genesis were used by painters. And there's a study section on poetry that mentions the Book of Psalms.
The students, the schools who will use this resource, they are the experiment. They will be the ones who will determine if this is effective or not. It's a radically different teaching methodology.
My vote is mainly because my concern, like I think everyone on the board, is that we take care of the reading problem. And I simply do not think that this is the program that will take care of making all the children learn to read.
Does it work? Well, I have a school district in my SBOE district that did it. Mm-hmm. And I went and watched it. I've watched it. I've sat in the classrooms. Mm. And I think it works.
School districts would be offered a financial incentive to help pay for the purchase of the materials.
Okay. There you go. You had an eyewitness who said he thinks it works.
Yeah.
Hey, I was sitting there and I looked. And
saw it happen.
Gosh darn it, it looked to me like there was some learning going on. I say we buy this curriculum across the entire state of Texas. I was watching this story develop, and again, you know, they're trying to use the position that you know, it's not indoctrination to use religion, because actually the study of religion, big religion, is, you know, something very worthwhile. And in fact, you know, being an old social studies teacher, it's one of those things that's like, yeah, if you really want to understand the world and understand history, I'll even put it history, understanding of the world's religions and how they've contributed to the shaping of our world today is an incredibly important topic. And in fact, one that we don't do very well with. And so they're taking that argument and then substituting, though, by saying, and so therefore, to address what Dr. Slucker just said, here's a curriculum that teaches about religion. Yes, we're going to mention some other religions, but we're going to use Judeo-Christianity as the, you know, the medium of which to help instruct everybody about world religions. And the problem is that what happens is that it really becomes an indoctrination of white Christian nationalism.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I have a little story of my own here. My older son had world religion in his high school, and mm-hmm. it was fantastic. He loved the course because he found out so many things about other religions and how they interact.
Yeah, and actually I've pushed this many times, and actually when you get into actually talking about really deep world comparative religions, the white Christian nationalists hate it. Mm-hmm. I used to do this with an activity with students who were about to be teachers, and I would have them read, you know, some what are called creation stories from across the world, you know, of, you know, dragons living in the heart in the center of the universe, and then having some kind of explosion, and, you know, all these fantastical things about how the universe is created with just these really far out ideas. And then I throw Genesis at them, mm-hmm. and then ask them, you know, and look at it. Yeah. And my goodness, Genesis has got all of these crazy ideas happening that are just like all. And then you get this kind of doubtful look on their face of going, well, but our fantastical creation story is true, though, Dr. Slucker, you know, and you're like, OK, so our crazy story is true, right. But the other crazy stories, they're just crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway,
doesn't make much sense.
But doing that, though, introduces doubt around the idea of one single religion being absolutely truthful. And so the reality of teaching about religions, that actually is something that the right, and particularly white Christian nationalists, are very fearful of, because that introduces the possibility, as you were saying with your son, at a minimum, people might start to appreciate other religions.
That's true, and that's what he took away from the course. I thought it was a great class, because I've been against, you know, teaching, you know, Christianity in schools, so I was really appreciative of what our school was offering.
Well, Dr. Tim Slucker, that is it for this time around, but we want to remind people they can get the Busted Pencils podcast. They drop with new ones Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then the show also on Saturday.
It's Saturday, 3 o'clock, one full hour.
There you go.
And by the way, I just wanted to pass along a good morning to my friend Tim from Sherry out in Horicon.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Sherry. I know. Hey, Sherry.
I know.
we miss Sherry every day.
Yeah.
All right, Tim. Thanks for joining
us again.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Coming up in our next hour here, Dr. Chris Kammer, the rock and roll dentist, will be with us.
Drilling people's teeth this morning.
We'll get into that.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this, you're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Matt Rothschild is going to be sitting in the big chair to break down all the news with analysis and humor. Don't miss it.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings at 10.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.